All right, this is chapter 22, lymphatic system, part two. We're going to go through the body defenses against pathogens of all sorts. There are two basic methods. In the first part of this audio, we're just going to quickly go over the categories, and then we'll slow down as we give example by example. But for the two methods, you have innate, which is nonspecific, and the adaptive, which is learned and very specific to what they're protecting you against. Together, they comprise the immune system. The immune system is a functional system rather than an organ system. So it's not the kind of thing where you could pull out an organ and say, oh, look, I've removed the immune system. It takes many parts working together throughout the body. Next, innate defense mechanisms. You have first line and second line. First line is skin, mucous membranes. And in addition to those two, the secretions of the skin and mucous membranes, which we will get into. Second line are phagocytic cells, antimicrobial proteins, and the inflammatory response. The adaptive defense mechanism make up the third line, and that's going to be lymphocytes, antibodies, and macrophages. So we'll go back to the first, the innate body defense. As I typed up for you, this system is up and running from the time you're born, and it never stops. This system defends you against bacteria, fungi, and parasites that are constantly on your body. And it all starts with intact skin. First line, this is the one that's working when your skin and mucous membranes are intact. We've studied skin before. You know it's held together with tight junctions, and it's very... It's very well put together to defend against us with overlapping cells. And as long as it's not torn, you have great protection, but it doesn't take much of a tear to let things in. Even something like a carpet burn or something from the micro tears is enough to let in bacteria or fungi. So it doesn't take much of a breach. For mucous membranes, same as skin, but they provide protection on the inward facing surfaces of the body. Some examples of those mucous membranes where you would find them are digestive, respiratory, urinary, and reproductive tracts. Any of those are lined with mucous membranes. And as far as skin and mucous membranes, the chemicals they secrete, there's a number of things that we have in our notes packet. The first is the acidic pH of skin. It's around 3 to 5 on the pH scale. And although it doesn't kill off bacteria, it does slow down the growth of many bacteria. Another thing you'd find on the surface of your skin is sebum. If you remember back, hair follicles had sebaceous glands associated with them. And one of the things what they secreted into the hair follicle was this oily secretion called sebum. And it is toxic to bacteria and helps slow them down a bit. Third thing's interesting, it's the acidic nature of the vagina. Again, it's a place where opportunistic pathogens would grow freely if they weren't held in check. And there's we'll learn more about during the reproductive unit, but there's an interesting symbiotic relationship where an acidity is maintained to reduce bacterial growth there. Number four, the stomach itself secretes hydrochloric acid along with digestive enzymes, and this is a potent acid. All the things you eat and drink obviously are going to go into your stomach first, and when they arrive there, they are greeted with a very strong acid, which is going to knock out the vast majority of anything that might be living in your food. The vast majority. Another secretion we have in both saliva and in tears, there are lysozymes, which are kind of an enzyme that helps break up pathogens. And for number six on chemicals they secrete is sticky mucus traps bacteria in the digestive and respiratory tracts. So all of that stuff makes up first line defense, skin and mucous membranes, as long as they're intact. On the next page, we're going to start talking about second line defense. And as the bullet says, this kicks in when skin or mucous membranes have been broken. The cells that will respond starts with phagocytic cells such as macrophages or neutrophils. They're going to either engulf bacterium or attach lysosomes to it if they're not a consumer of them. But either way, both of these will respond to any bacteria. A really interesting one, a cell response, are natural killer cells or NK cells. These are lymphocytes that recognize and kill your cells if they are infected with virus or if they're undergoing cancer or if they're becoming cancerous, I should say. NK cells don't consume the cells, but they punch holes in them and insert chemicals that cause the plasma membrane of the infected cell to die. So most of your white blood cells are looking for foreign invaders. These are looking for your own cells that are under attack. The next part of the second line defense is the inflammatory response. It seems like kind of a pain, and literally pain's one of its things, but it's the body's, again, natural reaction to damaged cells as a result of some sort of trauma or intense heat or chemicals or pathogens like viruses, or excuse me, bacteria or viruses. The signs of inflammatory response are redness, heat, swelling, and pain. And again, it's the tissues in that area become, the blood vessels become extra leaky. And so that's the first step to helping out those tissues, deal with whatever it is they're under attack by, or if it's just an injured area for cleaning up. So first three steps for inflammatory response, you see number one, blood vessels dilate and get leaky. So you have more than an average amount of fluid leaking out into those tissues. Number two, activate pain receptors. So that area is going to be left alone. You're going to send pain signals quicker and easier than normal. And phagocytes are drawn to the area to either clean up or do battle, whichever the case is. A word that you're familiar with, pus, is sort of a disgusting thing. I kind of wish we could do a microscope lab where we just had some pus and we stained it, looked at it under the microscope. It'd be disgusting, but I'd love to try it. But what it's actually made of is a mixture of dead or dying neutrophils. And you remember those from our microscope work with blood. They're the ones that are really common in the blood. Dead or dying neutrophils, tissue cells, and living and dead pathogens. These neutrophils that go there, they can kill, I think I read somewhere, up to 25 bacteria or so before they themselves get overwhelmed and die. So they become part of pus. It's not just the germs that it's made of, it's also dead neutrophils in there. Kind of gross. The next topic are the antimicrobial proteins, starting with complement. So in your blood, we've talked about all the things you find in plasma. There's about 20 different plasma proteins that together work to help fight off invaders. So they're just floating around all the time, not just when you're sick. When you're perfectly healthy, you have complement floating around in there. And what triggers them is when they bump into antibodies that have attached to the bacteria that they've been trained for. So when they bump into those, it causes a cascade of activities from these proteins. They punch holes in the plasma membrane of the invader, the bacteria, and then they basically form a ring in there that allows fluid to move into the cells, causing them to burst. So it punches holes and then maintains those holes, and causing water to go into the bacteria. It's a pretty wild thing. The next one, interferon, is super interesting. So let's say a cell has become infected by a virus. That cell's done. Whether it takes hours or days or whatever to kill it, it's done. So that cell's going to set out or release a chemical called interferon. It's going to go to surrounding cells and bind with their membrane receptors. So even though itself it's not going to make it, it's going to warn everybody around it. And those cells that have the interferon on their receptor sites will start making antiviral proteins. So even if the virus gets in there, these antiviral proteins will be made in advance of entry and they will not let the virus replicate in them. So it kind of it's an expense for the cell to make these things, but it saves its life. It's why they're not just made constantly. It's a reaction to a viral infection, interferon. The final example of second line defense is running a fever. Now, this is something nobody enjoys having, and some people, when they run a fever, immediately take medicine to bring the fever back down. But it's a natural part of healing, and if the fever is an acceptable number, generally I just let it run its course. You could, of course, check with your doctor the specifics on that for you. So, first bullet, blood temperature is regulated by the hypothalamus. We remember that it's measuring the temperature all the time. And when certain chemicals are detected there, and these chemicals are released from white blood cells that have been exposed to foreign substances, when enough of those chemicals reach the hypothalamus, it raises up the temperature. Bacteria in their reproductive process require large amounts of iron and zinc to increase their numbers. So during a fever, the liver and spleen are going to hold on to any iron and zinc to try to starve the bacteria of it as much as they can. And then the last benefit you get from having a high temperature is speeds up enzymatic reaction rates, which speeds up the healing process.